Hello and welcome to Radio SGN. I am one of your humble hosts, A.V. Eichenbaum. Pronouns they, them. I'm the editor-in-chief of Seattle Gay News, and with me, as per usual, is Lindsay Anderson. Lindsay, how are you?
I'm doing good. How are you?
You know, I'll be honest, I've had a bad morning. I've had a really rough morning, you know. I had a little extra time this morning in between meetings and emails, and so I thought, hey, I'm going to take a quick mental health walk, go to a cafe, get used to my new neighborhood. I just moved in with someone here, and, you know, it was nice. It was a nice little walk. You know, I picked up some coffee and took a little stroll around the neighborhood. Didn't get to drink any of it because I was on my way back. And I get to my gate, and I realized I don't have my keys. I'm locked out of my apartment building, and I don't have my keys. And I'm like, did I just leave them? Did I not lock? Because the gate locks automatically. And I realize there's a huge hole in my jacket pocket, and I can't get in. And some kindly neighbor lets me in, and that was very sweet of them, because I've never met them. I'm new. And I get up, and luckily the door is unlocked up top. I'm like, okay, so it's got to be in the apartment, right? And I've got maybe 20 minutes before the interview meeting that you guys will hear in just a bit, and I can't find it anywhere. And my partner is feeling sick today, and so they're not doing well. And I'm trying to, like, look for my keys, and I'm like, shit, fuck, I'll be back. God, okay. And I'm, like, getting frustrated with myself. I'm like, okay. And I just trace my steps. I go into the businesses. I go back to the coffee shop. I go around the neighborhood. I stop people on the street. I'm like, excuse me, I'm so sorry to bother you. Do you see my keys? Realize I forgot my phone. I'm like, okay, I'm thinking to myself, all right, it's not that bad. I can have keys remade. At least, you know, my partner's got keys. It's fine, right?
Oh, but you just got your second set of keys.
Well, the thing is, the reason I had to wait was because the first set of keys had do not duplicate on them.
Yeah.
But it turns out we had a spare key for what I needed the whole time that doesn't say do not duplicate. So I didn't need that spare key to be dropped off by our landlord. But that's okay. We didn't know, right? That just happens. Anyway, none of the other keys say do not duplicate. So we have the spare key. I can duplicate them. That's fine. Can't find my office key. Lost a pretty cool keychain, but they're just things, right? They're just things. So I sit down to prep myself for this meeting, and my laptop, I've got wired headphones. I sit down on my wired headphones, my laptop skitters across the desk, falls, spills the coffee that I haven't had all over the desk, all over my pants, all over the rug, all over my laptop, and I've got 2 minutes before this meeting starts. I'm like, shit. I'm moving fast. I'm speaking quickly, right? And I'm like, fuck, hey, I need a towel. And now my partner's mad at me because I'm creating a ruckus and they're not feeling well. And they have to go to work and I'm not helping and it's rough, right? You get into the meeting. I smell like coffee still because I managed to clean up the mess here and the mess because I threw what I thought was the rest of an empty coffee cup into the sink. Guess what? Wasn't empty. And it got all over the wall. It's splash tiles, so it turned out to be fine. Cleaned that up.
Splash tiles?
Yeah, like, you know, those little tiles at the back of your sink? Those are meant to be easy to clean.
I didn't know that's what they were called, splash tiles. Never mind.
That's what they're called. So, largely, I'm just frustrated with myself for making the person I live with's life difficult in the morning. And I just don't know where my keys could be. That's the office key. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can get a new office key. It's not like people are going around trying doors, right? It's just been a very frustrating morning.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, you know, there are things to be learned here, right? And sometimes you can't let something like that ruin your whole day. And what I've had to learn, especially working here at the SGN, is that sometimes you've got a bad hour, right? Or a bad 30 minutes. And then you got to say, okay, I've had a bad hour or so, but that's not going to be the rest of my day. I'm not going to say, oh, I've had a bad morning or a bad day, right? It's just that, like, I had a very lovely walk and I met a very kind local barista who couldn't help me find my keys. There were a lot of good things. It's a beautiful day. It's a little gray. You know, we're getting a little bit of that Seattle liquid sunshine, but I can move forward.
Yeah.
Right? That's important to remind oneself in the moment. And sometimes that's hard to do. But as soon as you can sit down, take a breath and say, okay, I've had a bad hour. But that doesn't mean this next hour has to be bad. Because otherwise, your whole day is going to be ruined because what? You lost a key, but everything's fine now, right? And it's just one thing after the other. And let me tell you, Lindsay, I'm not a lucky person. I have bad shit happen to me on the daily just because I'm a klutz. I'm still recovering from my sprained ankle. It's not fully healed after a couple of weeks. Shit happens.
You know, I have to say, your story, it sounds very reminiscent to like the same experience that happened to me right after I moved into my apartment in Capitol Hill. And you're right, like sometimes the best things could come out of like an incident where you lose your keys. For me, that was the inciting incident where I met Lynette, who was my first friend in Seattle. I don't know where she is anymore now. She's gone. But yeah, a similar thing happened where I left my apartment, left my phone in my apartment, took my keys just to go to the grocery store with Peter. Peter took a fat shit on the sidewalk right outside of the QFC in Broadway, and I didn't have a bag, so I was like frantically like scrambling to figure out how to grab a bag and pick up his fat shit off the sidewalk because like if you just pooped in the neighborhood, you know, I could sneaky like come back for it later, but this was like in public where everybody can see it. I managed to get his poop picked up, threw it in this nasty dumpster, went to QFC, and as soon as I got home with Peter, I realized I didn't have my keys and I was locked out of my apartment.
Yeah.
So I couldn't even put my dog back inside. I had to keep walking with him. So I went back to the dumpster. I figured I'd thrown my keys away in the dumpster where I threw Peter's shit. So I tied him to a tree by the dumpster, and then I saw Lynette with this giant stick. Lynette was a homeless woman that lived outside of the QFC for listeners who maybe don't know who Lynette is.
If you're not a longtime listener, Lynette is a big supporter of Lindsay's mental health
She is.
over the years. Yeah.
Yes.
Very positive individual.
Yes. So I just asked her if I could borrow her stick, and she was like, yeah, sure. So I took the stick and I was fishing around in this dumpster. I looked like a crazy person. Nobody would make eye contact with me as they were walking past because I'm just this crazy person using a stick to try to get in a dumpster. And then this man dressed like a cowboy came over and started talking to Peter, not me, because obviously I looked crazy. I was so embarrassed and I was just like, hi, sir, I'm so sorry. Like, I'm just digging through the dumpster because I think I threw my keys away. And he was like, wait a minute, your keys? And he described my keychain. I was like, yes. And he's like, oh, I saw those on the floor in QFC and I picked them up and turned them in. So I went and got my keys and I found them. And after that, every time I saw Lynette in front of QFC, I would bring her out some Coke, Coca-Cola, to thank her because I feel like it was her good vibes that led that cowboy to Peter.
Sometimes you just need a cowboy to rescue you. Unfortunately, I'm my own cowboy today.
I need that on a t-shirt.
And I'm an one unlucky cowpoke. Now, we've got a lot going on. We've got a great interview with Shobhit Aggarwal that I did get to on time. God damn it. But Lindsay, you said you had a quick pop culture corner you wanted to get to before we go to our ad break.
Yeah, I do. So I finished watching Modern Family for those diehard fans that remember the craze. And now I'm watching another sitcom about an American family, Malcolm in the Middle, which again, I feel like aired before my time, but I think it's hilarious.
I love that show. Absolutely.
It's so funny, so chaotic, and surprisingly very queer too. There's like just a lot of like subtle things. Like in one episode, Francis and his mom went to the gay rodeo. And it zoomed out, and like all these gay guys were there with their mom. And I was like, that, I want to go to the gay rodeo.
Yeah, that show was great because growing up, I'm the oldest of six now, but that's because my mom remarried, right? So I'm the oldest of four, AMAB people. Our family was going through a divorce and times were tough. And seeing a family like the family on Malcolm in the Middle, where everyone is very quirky and very lovable at the same time, and they fight, but it's okay because they still care about one another, even though they're like, one of them's a genius asshole middle child, which shout out James, love you. My brother James is getting his doctorate. He's 23. He's a great kid, but when we were growing up, we were always at odds. I'm a very Francis-like person. I would fuck up a lot. And so it was a very relatable show. And people are asking, like, what happened to, white people like that? That's something I've seen on Twitter. It's like, what happened to that culture of, like, folks? And it was the opioid crisis.
Yeah, I saw like a video essay on TikTok, shout out TikTok, that was talking about how you can really dissect like American class culture through sitcoms that Modern Family really represents the like idolized upper middle class that like a lot of people watch it and think it's relatable. But when you actually break it down, you're like, okay, these are all people that are living in really nice homes in California. They're very rich. They go on giant family vacations all the time. But like just the class concept isn't brought in as much. And then when you look at like Malcolm in the Middle, they are working class. They, you know, you see their house like messy. The yard is like not watered. And they were like just drawing a lot of comparisons between like the two families and how their ideologies politically and socially are like really shaped by their socioeconomic status. And I thought that was really fascinating.
And in the end, at least I find that Malcolm in the Middle is a much kinder show than your Modern Family, even though Modern
Yeah.
Family is intentionally more diverse because it's like, oh, look at how weird and different these gays and, Latinx people are in our white family. I've always found that I can't always watch Arrested Development or Modern Family because it's just rich people being shitty to each other.
Yeah.
And that's something that I loved, not just seeing myself in Malcolm in the Middle during hard times, having to take the public bus to school at like 6 a.m. in high school in our little weird suburban town or whatever, but like they had friendships that were much kinder and they did have issues and they did have problems, but they always, at the end, there was never like leftover resentment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was always like, yeah, we have this issue. We're gonna figure it out. We're like, I like the, it's like the trickster archetype as a family almost. It's like we don't have a lot, but we do have our brains and our gumption, and we're gonna figure it out. And I always really liked that. With Modern Family and shows like that, it always feels like, ah, things will work out because we have privilege.
Yeah.
And I always hated that, I guess, in a way.
The other interesting thing I think comparison-wise between Modern Family and Malcolm in the Middle is like all of the adult relationships in Modern Family. If you watch it, you're low-key like, why are any of them together? Like they all hate each other. Like
Right.
in Modern Family, you've got like these parents and they're always tricking each other, manipulating each other, lying to each other. And that's like where the conflict comes from. And then in Malcolm in the Middle, you've got two parents that are just horny for each other all the time. They're just like always trying to sneak off and like find places to be together. And it's like that's kind of where some of the jokes come from. And I just think that is really interesting too.
It's a very loving relationship. And my favorite episode, I think, one of them with the parents is Hal realizes that Lois is an atheist. And he's like, oh my God, I don't want her to go to hell. That's the whole thing. They realize at the end, spoilers, if you haven't seen Malcolm in the Middle, they realize at the end, it's like, well, we love each other and that's enough. We'll be able to work through this, even though I don't believe in God and you very much do. And his thing isn't, oh, you don't believe what I believe. It's, oh my God, we're not going to be in heaven together. And it's a very slight difference.
Yeah.
It's like, he's like, I want to spend eternity with the person I love. And I don't know. I think that was a really great male role model for me growing up and romantic role model because I didn't have that as a kid, at all, really. It was nice to see on TV, even, that that is what's being broadcast out in the world. Anyway, we've got to get to our ad break.
Okay.
Did not expect a conversation about Malcolm in the Middle to get this deep.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, sorry, guys, but ad break. Shobhit Aggarwal, more news coming your way.
Adult Time. Launched in 2018, Adult Time is a streaming service exclusively for adults. It's a platform built by fans who believe in a future where mature audiences can safely, securely, and proudly have a place in their lineup for premium, award-winning adult content. Dubbed the Netflix of porn by mainstream media outlets, Adult Time offers an extensive catalog of over 250 channels, 60,000 episodes, and 8 plus new releases per day from some of the most recognized studios, including Girls Way, Pure Taboo, Burning Angel, Fantasy Massage, 21st Sextury, and Vivid Entertainment, alongside exclusive original series, feature films, and much more. Adult Time. Porn done differently.
Help Madrona Grace Presbyterian Church celebrate Seattle Pride on Friday, June 16th from 5 p.m. to
to 7 p.m. at 832 32nd Avenue for their Pride 2023 Wine and Cheese event. Madrona Grace is a community that believes unequivocally in the radical inclusion of all people, so they invite you to join them for a fun evening filled with good eats, good people, good wine, and door prizes. Double the fun by bringing a friend or two. They look forward to seeing you on June 16th. For more information about Madrona Grace Presbyterian Church, visit their website at www.madronagrace.org. Joining me today via Zoom, he is another candidate for the City Council District 3 position. That's Capitol Hill, Eastlake, Montlake, I believe, Central District, so many various neighborhoods coming together. It's a very complicated situation, but of course, Capitol Hill is our heart and home. Shobhit Agarwal, how are you? How have you been?
I'm doing well. It is an interesting process. I've been to different kind of events. I've been knocking door. I've talked to over 1,000 people, and I've been visiting different meetings from different organizations who are telling us about what their priorities are and how things work. And it's very interesting where I get into problem solving more, which is what the job is. And it's been interesting in talking to so many different people, so many people who are knowledgeable about different areas. And I feel like I'm touch base with all those people and keep myself available to their ideas to be actually functional if I am elected to this position.
So what is your experience? Why should people vote for you?
So I am a first generation gay immigrant from India. I've been with my husband for 19 years. I met him in 2004 in Seattle. I've been in Seattle as my base since 2002 and in U.S. since 2000. I came here, and my background is comp science engineering and MBA. So I came here to work in tech. I worked at Microsoft from 2002 to 2010, contractor and then FTE. Then once I became a citizen, I went to pursue the American dream of becoming an actor. When I came back in 2017, I couldn't get back into tech because I was away for 5-6 years. I've been working retail since. I have been on my condo board for the past 5 years. That, in along with my program management experience, has enabled me to listen to my constituents, be empathetic to their problems, and focus on finding and implementing solutions. And I get the job done. And just as a caveat, I'm also a member of the SAG-AFTRA union.
Let's look at your platform real quick. I'm seeing you want to work with Seattle City Light and Sound Transit to focus on green infrastructure. Now, that's something we've heard from not all of the candidates, but a couple. Would you care to expand on that?
Yes. So just like internet, green infrastructure and green energy is the future. That's a future industry. Now, there are two parts of it. One is we want to use public transit. We want to get away from cars as much as possible. But public transit doesn't work unless people can travel from point A to B in a very efficient manner because time is money for them. So how do we build the aid sound transit, and how do we reduce time from going from the station to going to their home, the last mile, efficiently? In a very dense area, we should build loop buses so people can travel there, people can travel to their local grocery stores without having to drive there. Second part is the Seattle City Light. I live in a condo of 153 units. There are 5 electric cars already and only 2 charging stations. So people have to drive outside to charge their cars. The limitation is because the current coming into the building, and that is true across the city, is not sufficient to charge all cars at the same point. As the electric cars become more affordable, more people will buy them. And with the 2035 goal at the state level to only have new electric cars, Seattle City Light needs to upgrade its infrastructure, all the transformers, all the transmission lines, and tell the local people how to upgrade their infrastructure to be able to build those extra currents and charge the cars at the same time. That, again, brings a huge opportunity because, as I said, it's a green energy industry. Like internet, where we built Amazons and eBays and massive and Microsofts, what are the new businesses that will come out of Seattle to support that? And can they be spread across Seattle? And can they be men, women, a lot of gay people, trans people, visibility, you know, all kind of all races? The more we spread out, the more we spread out the wealth, that is the future. I want a more prosperous and equitable Seattle.
How do you feel about increasing the Sound Transit link light rail or making that more efficient?
That is part of it. That is going to be the core of that infrastructure. that has to be expanded everywhere. For example, if I have to go from here right now in Capitol Hill to Ballard, there's no transit, a light rail. It won't be there till 2039. So until that is built, most people will take a car because going from here to downtown and then taking a second bus because of the hub and spoke architecture takes them 45 minutes. It takes only 15 minutes by car unless, you know, there is a traffic jam. So we need to build the sound transit. It's just taking too long. It would have been easier 70 years ago, but we are where we are.
Right.
If we don't build it now, in 100 years, it will be 10 times as expensive and 10 times as more difficult because we will have a lot more people staying there, and building infrastructure under the people is much more expensive.
Absolutely. Now, let's look at some of your other goals here. Let's talk about homelessness, the unhoused population. Compartmentalize and target homelessness in a compassionate manner. What does that mean for you?
You have to meet where the people are. First of all, homelessness is caused because of lack of affordable housing. Most of the people who are recently becoming homeless are either youth who could be LGBTQ and who are being thrown out of their homes around Seattle, because Seattle is much more gay friendly, or they could be people who are in foster system and well, they're turning 18 and they are being thrown out by their foster families. Now, I support Lambert House. If we can fund, keep funding Lambert House in organizations like that, who can give structure and take these people off the street so they don't become homeless and give them a life, then they can pursue school, they can pursue jobs. You know, there's no dearth of jobs or schooling here, and build a whole life. And that is what I'm looking for. I met a gentleman, you know, on 15th Avenue Rudy's, and he talked to me about how he was unhomed at one point in his youth in New York. And somebody gave him a home and he could go to school and rebuild it. And now he's an expert artist. Mm-hmm. So how do we do that for youth level? For adult level, you know, if there is an old age homelessness, or if you are just not able to pay your rent because the rents are increasing massively here, we need a huge supply of homes in Seattle to be able to take those people off the street, give them housing security so that they can then rebuild the life. Maslow's need hierarchy says if you don't have the basic form of security, where you can sleep every night and be feel safe at home, you're going to have mental health problems. You're going to have substance abuse problems.
Mm-hmm.
I think long-term homelessness takes you there. It's not the other way around. It's very few people who become homelessness because of substance abuse. It's the long-term homeless people who are struggling every night to just survive is what causes mental health in substance abuse. So if we cut down the pipeline, people who are now becoming homeless or who have been homeless for less than 6 months and give them a shelter and give them security, there's enough jobs, enough schooling here to take them off street and let them rebuild life. And then we can address people who have been long-term homelessness. And there was an article in Seattle Gay News today about how substance abuse needs to be helped. But if you put them in housing, and there are tiny housing I just saw being built by the university, there are 22 houses that just been completed. If you give them homes and give them security, then we can talk to them. We can build an artificial family around them, family of friends around them, and see how do we take them off substance abuse? How do we provide them mental health? Can we convert some, you know, downtown empty buildings into mental health facilities, into substance abuse facilities, and help them get into programs and convince them that is the way to go? But you have to target those persons one at a time. Before that, we have to cut the pipeline so that not if we are taking five people off of homelessness, we don't see 10 new people coming in.
Fix the problems from the ground up.
Yes.
So, speaking of the ground up, let's talk about potholes, damaged pavement. You're the only candidate that I see that specifically mentions this. As far as my research goes, maybe some more people have picked up on it. It says on your website that it can take a long time, sometimes years, to resolve local concerns like permits and filling up bad roads. How would you work with the city to fix that?
The two parts of it. I recently saw that there is already an app where people can report. I want to understand what is the process that the city is going through. Now, a few of the timeline issues, maybe they just don't have manpower. Now, I've been dealing with the elections commission people. They have been very responsive. So the workers there are not the problem. It's just maybe the pile of work on them might be the problem. I want to understand what that pile of the work is. Where is the shortfall? Is it the human resources shortfall? Is the people who are fixing is the shortfall? If we are fixing potholes and we are relying on private contractors to do it, it may not be economical for them to do fix one pothole at a time. Is there a different group? When I was walking around, I met a lady who said she would love to organize a volunteer group to fix graffiti and clean up graffiti. You know, there could be a graffiti place in public parks where people can go express their art and then the rain washes it out. But graffiti is not good in people's home and businesses. So if there was a simple process where we organize different volunteer groups in different areas, and as graffiti came and somebody reported it that, you know, I was my business or my home was maligned with the graffiti, there it passes that down to them. And based on their schedule, within a weekend, within whatever, they go and clean it up. And this is going to be a collaborative effort depending on what the issue is. One, at the city level, what is the process? How do we make it streamline it? B, who solves the problem? And how do we make sure that they're doing much more efficiently and effectively? One of my pet peeves is that when you come out of I-5 and turn right on James Street, that turn causes the cars to have massive shocks. It's just bumping. And for a poor person who is relying on their car for going to job and take the car out, they can lose their livelihood. Fixing those issues should not be, you know, it's been there for now over 12 months. That should be fixed urgently. Now, Madison Project, they are fixing it. They started opening it up, Madison Avenue. And it is really good that they are concrete, but it's taking so long. Why?
What would you say is your biggest issue on your platform? What do you want to focus on first? What's day one for you?
So I would say three, because as a program manager, as a board member, if I say it's only one issue for me, then basically it's saying I will take my gig and go home. And I'm one person who build in coalitions, making solutions, building solutions, because I don't know everything. That means there is no single issue I'll say I'll stake my life on. But what I want to build as in my platform is green infrastructure overall. That is one pillar. Second is homes affordability, which will solve homelessness. And third is local, addressing local concerns. Based on those three, local concerns is what people are concerned about day-to-day life. If you start solving it faster, their belief in government, their belief that the city is doing something becomes solidified. And Seattle people are very kind. I've talked to 1,000 of them. They want to solve the problem. They want to just may want to make sure that their dollars are being used effectively. So how do we make sure, you know, convincing them that we are solving problems, we are listening to them, and then convincing them that the home solution we are going to do, the green infrastructure we're going to do, is going to A, make the city more prosperous, B, make it more equitable, and C, address the concerns they have. And that is the way to generate confidence in the government, whether at a city level or a higher level.
I notice here you also have a support reproductive rights, LGBTQIA rights, and worker rights to organize. And you've got a couple of bullet points here on your website. LGBTQIA equality, of course, I'm sure that hits close to home for you.
Absolutely.
Being married to your husband for 19 years. Congratulations, by the way.
Thank you. Well, we've been married 10 years.
Our
anniversary is coming off on June 14. We got them same day married as our first date, so we don't have two anniversaries.
Smart. I can tell you're a project manager. So we've got that, and then we've got keep access to family planning economical and easily accessible. What does that look like?
So I'm going to leverage the organization that are already there, Planned Parenthood, and I want to do the access all across, you know, men, women, we all can do help in family planning. Women have access to all kind of pills, whether federally we do it or not. The state is supporting that. They have access to abortions as they want. I have no one to say what the person's rights are. They have the right. They choose what their life will be. Same case, you know, if women want to get the tube site, they should have the freedom to do that. If men want to get vasectomies, they should have the freedom to do that. I want to support all reproductive rights, whatever they need, because they know along with their doctors what's best for them. I am in no position to judge. My job is to make it accessible to them.
So it says here, encourage vasectomies to reduce onus of family planning on women. Would that be like an ad campaign, or how would that operate?
So I don't know the answer to that. I know that in India, 40 years ago, my father got a vasectomy. There was a financial incentive. I don't know how that will work in America. The Indian population is still growing, and it's much more massively than here, right? But we educated a lot of people in India, and they controlled the population, but the people who were unfortunately left lack of education grew multiple times. The more education we give, the more family people plan, right?
Yeah.
If you realize the actual cost of giving love to a child and growing them, a child who's properly nurtured costs about $250,000 from 0 to 18 approximately. That is a massive cost. Unless we are, you know, I mean, I was going to pursue acting. We were thinking about whether we should have a child or adopt a child. We could do either or all. If I have a child, I want to make sure that I give him or her the best education, give him or her the best opportunities possible. If a person wants to do that, that is a lot of investment of time, money, everything. And that is what makes a happy child, a happy future human being. If you're not loved, if you're not given those opportunities, you're struggling in the future.
Now, with that in mind, what is your stance on public education and the way it's handled in the U.S.? Have you given much thought to that?
So one of the problem that happens in education, say, compared to India, and you see that here also, education is left just to teachers and they are blamed for everything. It takes a village to grow a person. Why do you see that all spelling bees are dominated by Indian and Asian families? Because parents spend their evenings, they sacrifice their evenings, they're working, etc. And there is a problem in US where, especially if you are a single parent home or even a two parent home, both parents are working 40, sometimes 60 or multiple jobs to survive.
Yeah.
And so you're not able to concentrate on children. And if you have more than one or two children, you don't have enough time to give to every child and make sure they are doing their homework, that they're working. And then you're supplementing their school education with home education. You're teaching them how to do their finances. You're teaching them how to live a life, how to be a better human being. Until and unless, people have children with the idea that they will do that, it's awful for the children.
It does seem sort of against logic to try to bring a person into the world when the world is already so screwy.
Exactly.
One could argue that social programs, including, more access to education and an increase in the ability for people to be at home and to work at home, making rent more affordable. I feel like it's a multifaceted problem. And I know we don't have a lot of time to get into it. It's something I think about a lot. Is I'm the oldest of six, just to get personal for a second, because the listeners love that. I had to drop out of college so that my younger siblings could go. I mean, I've been on the workforce since I was 13, 14, to try to do something with my life. I think it is a real issue that college is not more affordable. Work is not paying people enough sometimes, and rent is wild in this city. I mean, I moved from the Silicon Valley. I grew up in Gilroy. I don't know if you've ever been. You don't have to go. There's not a lot there but garlic and people, and because it's close to San Jose, rent is like $1,900 for a one bedroom. That was 5 years ago. It's probably increased since then, but I feel like Seattle, which does have a lot more to offer, is potentially heading in that way. And when you can't support people and you don't have people living there to be, a workforce, a labor force, that could be an issue. And those people can't have families. And
see, that comes to my fourth point, which we haven't talked about, the public safety part, right? Most of our cops and fire people don't come from local town because they cannot live here.
Right.
Plus, a lot of them are hereditarily firemen or cops. So they are coming here because they grew up in Snohomish County or Pierce County. Pay is higher here, so they can live there cheaply and then come here. But that is where housing affordability comes in. A, you dezone all across the city so that people can build taller because our land is exhausted. We want to maintain our green nature so that we remain an emerald city. So we have to grow taller as much as we can, hopefully with parking underneath, which I would require because people's, nature is not going to change. They still have cars for the next 20, 30 years at least. Second part is because private builders will never build supply more than demand because the prices will go down, we have to supplement that with I-135 and fund it properly so that we have housing which is commensurate with people's income and they pay rent according to their income they are earning. And that would enable cops to stay here, fire people to stay here, nurses to stay here, grocery workers to stay here. I go to PCC when my husband works for PCC now. So we go to PCC Central District. One of the persons who does salad and stuff, he has to move to Lynnwood because he cannot afford to live here. And he's working more than 40 hours.
Yeah. Right?
How do we make that affordable? How do we stop people moving on because they cannot afford it? Same case, if a builder was to buy a land from Central District person and there is being gentrified because they cannot afford it, what I would like to do ideally is maybe have a first right of refusal for that person where if you're building four properties, the first right of refusal on one of those properties might be that person. They can live in the same area where they grew up. Now, not any of these ideas are set in stone because I don't have the perfect solution. I want to hear from different people who can give me the solution. But we need to reach a compromise. So, yes, we are an immigrant city. A lot of immigrants are coming here. And because they're working in tech sector, because they will work in future green energy, they will earn high wages. And therefore, they are coming and they will build their life. So they can afford a lot more stronger or a lot higher prices. But we want to be concerned about the people who grew up here and who want to live here. And how do we make sure we have a balance of all different people together? We don't want a homogeneous society. We want it to be diverse so that we can actually experience the benefit of diversity.
Well said. Very well said. I think we're running low on time here, but before we go, is there anything specifically you would like to tell our listeners?
I don't have all the solutions. I am running on bare bones campaign. I was the last person to enter, but I have a lot of life experience and I want to bring it to make sure that we work to improve the lives of our citizens. That is the point. If you want to support me, you look at my website. If you like campaign and you want to support me and you still have your democracy vouchers, help me fund my campaign for the next 53 days, 52 days. Yes, there is a link where you can go to the democracy voucher in the city. If you have recycled yours, you can find them for a replacement voucher as well as just submit them online if you want.
And that's voteforshobit.com. There will be a link in the show notes, of course. Do you have social media at all that people can link to?
Yes. So my Instagram is voteforshobit. My Twitter is voteforshobit. And I have a Facebook page, voteforshobit.
Voteforshobit.com. There is a donate button right at the top.
Thank you. And then there is also, just to spell it out, it's S-H-O-B-H-I-T. Because if you misspell that, you won't go to the right place.
Yes, and it is also going to be in our show notes, so check that out. Shobhit Agarwal, thank you so much for being on the show, and good luck to you.
Thank you, Ash.
Did you know that the guy that plays Hal is Bryan Cranston?
Yeah, 100% I knew that.
So he's like also the hardcore drug guy from Breaking Bad?
He's one of the greatest actors of our time.
That's so crazy. I was watching him do the ice dance thing, and I was like, who is this guy? I looked up, I was like, what?
We're still talking about Malcolm in the Middle, folks.
Sorry.
It's such a good show. If you haven't seen it, go watch it. I also recommend watching The Adventures of Pete and Pete, because that's another show where it's just sort of a working class family, and they're very scrappy and weird. Anyway, let's talk about the state of emergency in the United States, because that's what we got to talk about today. So we're trying to ease into it with something soft, but here we go. Lindsay, you wrote this piece.
Yes. The Human Rights Campaign, which is the largest LGBTQ civil rights organization in the country and has been around for nearly 40 years, declared a state of emergency for the United States. This is the first time they've ever done that. So it's very kind of unprecedented. And they released a super long statement their president wrote about why they've made the decision to declare a state of emergency, really breaking down how it's gotten this bad in the United States. And this article I wrote really just kind of gets into that, dissects some of their reasons behind why we are where we are today, who some of the main actors are, like Ron DeSantis, some states that they really recommend not traveling to if you can help it. They also released an official guidebook for people all over the United States. The guidebook has information about accessing like gender affirming care if you are someplace where that is becoming illegal. It has resources for financially aiding people that are fleeing states that have made it impossible if you're trans or gender nonconforming to live there. And then also just kind of emotional help as well with like how to navigate difficult conversations with anti-LGBTQ friends and family members.
Yeah, and that guidebook is a free PDF. I'm going to put a link in the show notes. I'm going to send that all over. I think we should probably promote it on social media just to make sure that people are safe. Well, you and I have known it's been bad for a while, but it does suck to have like the Human Rights Campaign be like, hey guys, this is bad. This is a state of emergency. This is terrible.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it'll be a helpful thing at least to bring attention, because for people that maybe aren't queer or are allies, they're just not aware and seeing what's going on in the same way. I don't know. It brings me back to like a conversation I had with my mom last week where she's planning a trip to Florida in the fall. And I was like, how can you go to Florida? Like, how can you spend money in that state? And, you know, it's aiding Ron DeSantis, and Florida is the worst place for queer people. You have a queer child. And she was just like, well, it's not that bad.
They've got Disneyland. How can it be that bad? Sorry, Disney World, excuse me. Sorry, Disney adults.
Including Ron DeSantis, who got married in Disney World.
He did what now?
He got married in Disney World. Did you not know this?
I try really hard to put up boundaries between my work life and my personal life. It doesn't work. But at the same time, I'm not like, oh, I hate Ron DeSantis. I'm going to go find out everything about him. Because that's not a healthy way to use my free time. I appreciate that you did it, because what the fuck?
Yeah.
Okay, great.
But yeah, we are in a state of emergency. They kind of broke down that there have been over 1,000 anti-LGBTQ bills proposed to state legislators. Right now, they are monitoring 525. 200 of those specifically target transgender people. It breaks down kind of the which bills are most common. Bills against transgender athletes are the most frequent right now, as well as bans on gender-affirming care. But even bans on, like, pronouns, education, don't say gay bills, those are all things that they've been tracking. They really wanted to emphasize, too, that the right-wing Republicans, the far-right people that are pushing these bills are not the majority of Americans. Even in places like Florida, statistics show that the majority of citizens support LGBTQ rights and want more protections against discrimination against queer people and trans people. And it's just kind of the small minority of outspoken bigots that have been pushing these laws in states across the country. And they even highlighted there's specific groups that have been declared hate groups by the ACLU that fly into state legislatures to speak and make it sound like they're locals when they're not. They are, you know, just a small group of people. And so that's kind of where we're at. The Republicans have been really sneaky in getting a lot of these bills passed, doing things like trying to rush bills in like late night sessions, expelling liberal members of their voting body. This has happened especially in Montana, where Zoe Zephyr, a representative, was kicked out of the state congressional building. So yeah, it's pretty crazy to live here right now.
Yeah, and you know, the best way to stay informed is to stay informed. I mean, there's ain't nothing to it but to do it, right? There are a lot of resources out there, and this HRC guide and just the whole website is really great. Again, like, there'll be a link to that in the show notes. We got Goth Pride. Dan did a spotlight on Goth Pride, if you want to talk about that real quick.
Yeah.
I got to be up front here. I was never fully goth. I was a lot more emo and emo adjacent. I wasn't allowed to wear clothes that fit me for a long time growing up, and I wasn't allowed to wear all black like I wanted, partially because it was depressing for my folks to look at, and also because it got to be like 110 in the summer, and that I would have died. But there's a special place in my heart for the goth subculture, and Gothic Pride Seattle is an organization that has been part of the community and overlooked by and large. Before I sprained my ankle, I was hoping to go to the Mix Gothic Pride Seattle pageant. What do you know about goths, Lindsay?
I know that I was scared of them when I was a kid because I was raised Catholic, but low-key Catholics are the most goth out of all the religions. I know it's not a phase, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, I'm currently dating a goth, shout out, but I remember growing up, I was very involved with the darker side of things. You know, like, I listened to metal, and I didn't always listen to metal, but, you know, Black Sabbath was my indoctrination, and also Danny Phantom, I feel like, is a very goth show. Invader Zim, sort of things like that. Hot Topic was at its peak when I was a kid, and that apparently was, like, the death of goth culture.
The death of it?
Well, so here's the thing, right? Let's indoctrinate you. You'll be a baby bat for the day, okay? So there are different subcultures of goth, and there's like the old school goths and, like, you know, 80s gothic culture is kind of where a lot of it comes from. Tim Burton is heavily inspired by gothic stuff, but all of that is reminiscent or inspired by the romantic movement of the 1700s and like Frankenstein, Mary Shelley stuff, you know, the ascots, the puffy clothes, like there's that aspect to it, but there's also like the new wave aspect to it with like Susie Sue and the Banshees and like the big heavy eyeliner that's inspired by 1920s Art Deco and German Expressionist films, especially like Cabinet of Dr. Caligari or Nosferatu is one of my favorites. It's a classic. It still holds up 100 years later, like if you can believe it. And there's also a remake in the 70s by Werner Herzog that I just adore because it's so, so ridiculous. But there's more to it than just the clothes, right? There's a community and a sense of otherness, which there's kind of a Venn diagram there with the queer community. And there are a lot of LGBTQIA plus goths. A lot of folks found their niche, their home online back in the 90s. There were a lot of like queer goth meetup groups that I was too young for because I am not a vampire.
But if you were, that would be very goth of you.
Yeah, if I had been alive for hundreds of years and had finally found a sort of Shreknet, if you will, then yeah, that would have been where I would have hung out probably. You know, there's the leather. There are like people like me who have darker undertones to their, like for right now, I'm wearing an Order of the Good Death shirt that literally it's I heart eco-friendly death options. And it's a big heart around the planet. But, you know, there's this obsession with morbidity and death is an aspect of it. But also there's this deep cultural acceptance among gothic culture. Like I've never met a metalhead who's a full-on gatekeeper, you know, and metalheads and goths aren't the same, but there is crossover. And it's really great to see that in Seattle, where there are a lot of goths and there are a lot of queer folks, there is a gothic pride just for that. They call themselves the darker side of the rainbow. And I think that's wonderful. I think we should celebrate subcultures as often as we can because we don't want homogeny in queer culture, right? We want to experience diversity as much as we can. And you don't see accurate representation of goths a lot of the time. Like NCIS, maybe. But yeah, it's really neat.
NCIS?
Yeah, have you seen NCIS?
The crime show?
Yeah.
I've heard of it.
Abby, their forensics specialist is a goth, and that was like a big thing in the 2000s.
Would it be offensive to the goth community if I said that calling it the darker side of the rainbow is really cute?
No, I think they probably would agree.
Okay, cool.
A lot of the goths that I know are like super bubbly and like very nice, you know, as well as kind. So Gothic Pride Seattle does organize monthly goth nights, dances, swap meets. You know, they're in Tacoma and Seattle. They have a fundraiser for community stuff. On June 17th, Gothic Pride will host a goth fly a kite at Alki Beach as one of its summer picnics. Like, there's a lot of joy in the goth community and in the goth queer community especially, because it's like there's nothing more joyful than finding your community and finding that you fit somewhere.
Yeah. Would you say that Marceline the Vampire Queen would be goth?
Goth queer representation,
awesome.
100%.
Yes.
Maybe more like in the punk rock or metal genre, but absolutely.
What We Do in the Shadows, also goth queer representation?
Vampire queer representation with gothic aesthetics, because vampire aesthetics are very in. I do have a lot of books published in like the late 90s, early 2000s from very toxic masculine gothic figures. And I'm glad to say that has not been my experience since like the mid 2000s. A lot more accepting. Shout out Constantinos and Father Sebastian. If you're listening to the show, get over yourselves. That's a real deep cut for the goths out there, but I just thought I'd let them stew on that.
Do we have a lot of goth listeners?
I don't know. We have at least one.
Ooh, I could do a poll. I'll do a poll on our account on Monday when this comes up.
Sure. Yeah, anyway, Gothic Pride Seattle, go give them some love. We're ending on sort of a nicer note because life is hell.
Yep.
I think that's our show.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that's our show. I think I'm good. It was kind of a light paper. I mean, there's a lot more, of course, you want to read online. We only give you some of the highlights here, but I'm good if you're good.
Yeah, I'm good.
Hey, gang, thank you so much for listening. If you've had a bad day, you know, don't let it get you down.
Listen to that one song, Bad Day by The Chipmunk.
Bad Day by Daniel Powder.
Yeah, but the Chipmunks cover.
Listen to the Chipmunks cover. No, seriously, though, you know, if you're feeling low, you're feeling down because life is hard, things are rough, just remember that it's not always going to be like this.
Yeah, and sometimes you meet the best people out of a worst situation. Like Lynette. If you're listening, Lynette, I hope you're well.
Honestly, I'm more interested in that cowboy. Sign me up.
He was an elderly man.
Hey, we're not going to yuck yums here. We're not ageist on Radio SGN. All right, folks. Well, follow us at Seattle Gay News on Instagram and Twitter. Find us on Facebook. If you want to see some funny memes, you can follow the radio.sgn Instagram page. Go ahead and check out Isabel Mata's show, Being Yourself Loudly. Word on the street is she's got some stuff coming in the pipeline there. She's the other podcast on the Seattle Gay News Podcasting Network. And don't forget to vote. That's coming up. The August primary is running right up on us. We're going to have a couple more candidates as guests in the near future, and I'm really looking forward to that. It's been so great meeting each and every one of them and hearing what they have to say. Because, hey, folks, I don't know if you know this, the nation might be in turmoil, but local politics and helping your community is how you can make your life better immediately. Lindsay, anything to add?
No, I mean, I just 100% agree with that. Local politics is super important. And if you go back and check out why our country is in a state of emergency, it's because of local politics and state level legislation that's being passed. So vote, be active.
All right, folks. I almost signed off like my old podcast. Holy shit, I'm tired. Zos to you.
What?
Go listen to January Men, a January Boys fan cast, a completely improvised show about a completely made-up TV series and film series wherein we've created an entire alternate universe, and it's sort of a love letter to fandom and film. You can still find it. There are like something like maybe 35 to 60 episodes. I don't remember. It's been a few years, but it's me and Davis Banta, who co-hosted with me a while ago. And there was a whole time when we were joking about Jeff Bezos being our God, our Lord and Savior on the show. And so Zos to you was how we greeted everybody on the show. It's funnier than it sounds. Maybe skip the first episode, but it's the only time my dad's actually called me a genius for my work. I'm still glowing on that 4 or 5 years later. Much love, and we'll see you in the funny pages.
Bye.
Radio SGN is hosted by A.V. Eichenbaum and Lindsay Anderson, and produced by A.V. Eichenbaum. Music for this show was provided by T.R.G. Banks and Jesse Spillane, or was provided for free by Anchor. Thank you so much for listening. Check us out on SGN.org or wherever you find podcasts.